we're back again. And we finished off, we just got into the design of the teepee based on the cotton. And you make teepees and many other things. Can you give me a history of the teepee? I guess we started. They got their design from the little cottonwood leaf. And it went from there to what? To present time.
To buffalo hides, to canvas, to what I use now is acrylon, acrylic canvas.
Back then, what was the... Why would one have a teepee rather than a hula?
Just depends on if they were Plains, Indians, or, you know... Just depends on your tribe, what dwelling you lived in, really.
Would you say those that, their big main structure was the teepee were more nomadic?
Yeah.
And correct me, did they also, what is this called that you drag behind a horse on poles?
Travoy.
Would this be the teepee poles itself,
yeah,
and then you store everything on it so that,
yeah,
you could, the poles served a traveling function other than a structural,
mm-hmm,
function.
For the children, for a little playpen to travel in, they'd weave up like a basket out of willows, put it on the travoy for them to sit in so they couldn't get in trouble. A little cage.
Now you yourself use different patterns. You know, you have the one collar, as you call it, two collar, or you do a mountain thing. Was there and I've seen pictures, you know, they got buffaloes painted on their teepees and this and that. Is this true? Did they really do this?
Oh yeah, they paint their spirit, whatever they call their spirit name, they would paint that on there.
What you talked about earlier, that they got through a vision or whatnot.
They go up on a vision quest. Every young boy, when he like reached the age of about 12,
mm-hmm,
to 14, would hike up and fast. Go hike to the top of a mountain and fast for like 3 days until he could look in the water and see his colors. And that's what he would learn about himself. He would have a vision, and that would be his spirit, you know, vision quest. That would be his spirit guide throughout the rest of his life. And from what I know about it, I'm not an expert, but I've done this myself. One time,
mm-hmm,
I did this up in Creed, hiked up to the Continental Divide and spent the night with Philip and went on a vision quest of sorts, you know.
And do you find the teepee structure a good way to live compared to a... Of course, there's nothing better than a house with our modern conveniences. But when you don't have them, we have several portable type ways to live out in the woods, from your pop tent to your army tent and your teepee. Would you suggest the teepee be the best way if you had to spend any time?
Yeah, anybody who's spent any time in them sees the beauty of them, because you can have a fire right in there. They're so much more aesthetic, plus they're practical, they're warmer. Just the whole way it's set up. The minute you heat it up, you light the fire, it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
We spent the winter in our teepee up in Pitkin at 9,500 feet, and people thought we were going to freeze to death up there. And they were down in the valley, and their cabins with hardly any chinking, and the snow would blow right through the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the ones that were roughing it, not us. They were. They thought we were freezing to death up there. The people that rented the Pitkin Hotel for the winter, that was the winter the Pitkin Hotel came to life, they begged us to stay down there and cut wood for them, because that hotel was made out of chunks of rock, cut rock, you know, and it was like a tomb. It was so cold. You had to keep heat on in there constantly. And, you know, they said, here, you have a room upstairs. That's your room. You just stay here with us. Y'all don't want to be going back up there to that teepee and freeze to death. We were living in luxury up there. We were.
How did the Indians react to you as a white man? How many teepee makers are there? You damn near have a monopoly in this area.
Yeah, there's some over in Ridgeway.
Are they more a factory type people, or?
They have a brochure and stuff, but they don't use the same material. I've looked at their teepees. They're not as good as mine. No, people though have checked them out and come back to me to get, you know. But there's teepee makers all over the place. But you can, you know, just depends on what you want. But I've lived in them, and so I realize the places that wear out the fastest, and I reinforce them and stuff, and my teepees last a long time, a lot longer than a lot of them.
Are these other teepee makers like you, white folk?
Yeah, most of them are.
I wonder what the Indians think about that.
Doesn't seem to bother them.
Because it still keeps to their ritual and...
One time I was going to teach Alden Naranjo how to make... He was going to be an apprentice because he could get this funding from the government. But he put it down where he wanted a sewing machine, he wanted everything. They couldn't quite buy him all the equipment he needed. But yeah, he was going to have me... He was going to be an apprentice to me. He wanted to learn how to make teepees.
Now, what I've seen in your brochures, you have certain designs, and one is the door opening. There's the teardrop, and there's the...
Just mostly the oval door is the most practical, but...
Which was most common of the Indian?
The oval door, or not even a cut opening. It was just a slit that they'd push it back. They'd lace it up to a certain point, and then the rest would just drape down to where they could close it or open it, you know.
So now, just a straight slit, and you've...
Just cut this oval door, and then I make a door cover for it with willows that'll hold it stretched tight, you know. But the Utes like a door flap. They like to have like kind of a U-shaped door, which is open at the bottom, not closed together, with two lacing pins at the bottom. They just wrap it around the poles. And they always have me make like a square, rectangular door flap, usually for them.
So depending on the tribe or the culture of a tribe, on how you would design. Well, I like to say the doorway. The rest is the same, right? It's not a pure circle. Well, it's oval.
It's different with every tribe. The Crow teepee are four pole tripods.
And it is all.
And then, without the other poles in between, but we have three pole tripods. The Sioux design.
I see.
There's lots of different, like Sioux with Cheyenne smoke flaps, which, the earlobes of the flaps are hung down lower than you could just cut straight across. It's just all in what you want. Most people like those, though. Now it just seems like the tribes don't really stick to their
own individual.
Except for their doors. They like, around here, they like those doors just to walk in, not have to step over. Which is probably...
We call it maybe a threshold. It's a piece of cloth that goes under there.
Which is the way it always was. I think that's a white man's innovation to have it laced together at the bottom. Or maybe a Sioux, I'm not sure.
Like your teepee, you step over this little...
Yeah.
Because there's a piece of material through there.
Sometimes
I want to call it a threshold. Something to trip over. This is not common.
No, they like to do
this. This is what you're calling the white man's design.
Or maybe
actually
a
was
Sioux
to
design.
Do this.
Maybe a Sioux design, but I don't know where it came from. They don't seem to like it. They like to have it open, which it makes a lot more sense.
And... I'd help you set up your teepee one time with Santa Stephen, who's a local Ute Indian around here. What was the meaning of the horsehair on the pole and the tobacco ritual?
Well, the horsehair on the pole is to tell which way the wind's blowing.
And
the tobacco is just to purify the ground. Sacred tobacco, so you say a prayer, and when you do a sweat lodge, you do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Everything is symbolic, when you dig out the pit for the sweat lodge, you sprinkle the dirt out to this mound, and that's a sacred red road, and then you in between each sweat, I don't do it, but they would smoke the peace pipe and stuff with special herbs that were purifying herbs and stuff.
That's what they were, they were herbs,
say a prayer to the four winds also, that's what they would, every morning, they would get up and say a prayer to the four winds.
And their peace pipe rituals, we get all kinds of propaganda, this white folk, especially the old druggies. Oh, they must be smoking marijuana. This is not true, huh? You're saying it's just certain herbs. We might even, tobacco, of course, is tobacco is a plant, but it was just a smoking substance.
I've made up some smoking mixtures that I learned about in some books that I read. And some of them are what they would smoke in the sweat lodge was... The inside of red willow bark mixed with kinnikinick, which is a little shrub that grows up in the mountains. It's like a natural caffeine buzz. And then peppermint, and you make a mixture of this, and that's their sacred smoking mixture. Just herbs that they would gather from wherever they were. And every area has its own herbs that you need and its own medicine
mm-hmm.
that you need for whatever illnesses you would get in that area. If you were to just live in that general area your whole life, every kind of medicine that you would ever need can be gathered right there. And I still believe that because I have found it up high in the mountains and also in East Texas where I lived before. For a while, you know, I was into gathering herbs down there.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about their sweat lodges and their rituals? You know me that I don't attend these things because I feel like I'm a white man that does not belong in Indian tradition, even though I've been invited many times.
Well, I don't do it I do it for my own personal cleansing. I don't go to a community sweat or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I always have made my own sweat lodges. High in the mountains is the best way to get clean from the inside out. When you can't take a bath, take a hot bath.
Could this have been something they did in the Arizona place, being the lack of water?
They had little sweat lodges in Arizona that Lorenzo pointed out to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're different shapes than they are here. They're like little teepee shapes with earth on them, with mud on them.
Mm-hmm.
Lay a bunch of little tiny sticks to where the sweat lodge, and I think they would dig it down into the ground a little bit, like 3 feet down or something, and then lay these sticks around and put mud on top or adobe or something. And the way I always made mine were with willows, make a willow frame, and then you lay blankets, or they would lay skins over them. That's the best way to get clean high in the mountains, though, like a steam bath. Because the Swedish have their saunas, you know, their steam baths.
Well, now in the high mountain ranges in southwest Colorado, we have an abundance of water.
But it's not hot water. They had no way of heating up like we do. They had no utensils to heat up large amounts of water, unless what they would do sometimes is hang a tripod with a skin and drop hot stones in it to boil. That's how they would boil soups and stews.
Uh-huh.
But as far as heating that much water to bathe in, that was just impractical. This way you get cleaned up. It's not just soaking in hot water. It's to clean yourself out from the inside out. Sweat all the poisons out of your body, out of your pores. You're supposed to fast the whole day before you do a sweat, and then drink herbal tea and stuff just to cleanse your whole system, and then sweat all this poison out of your pores. You get clean from the inside out, and then go jump in it. Like, you do it like 3 or 4 different shifts of it for 15 minutes, and then go jump in the stream, and then go back in and sweat some more, and you get so high. It's such a natural high. When you're done with a sweat, it's just amazing. We had one in Arizona too. Rhonda and I built 2 sweat lodges. Mm-hmm. Each year we were down there, we had sweats. We'd do one a week, and the guests would all get into them.
Because they like that Indian ritual. Even though to me it was almost kind of a touristy thing, maybe phony.
Not really, no. I don't think...
Maybe depending on the individual?
Yeah, it's up to them. They didn't all do it, no. Just the ones that were... They weren't doing it for... The ones that did it were really serious about doing it, because you either have to be or you're not, because you can't stand to be in there if you're not really serious about it or spiritual about cleansing yourself. It's not like it's a gimmick or anything.
I'm all for a sauna.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no spiritual belief behind it.
Well, I don't do it with a spiritual belief. I do it for my own cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to get clean. You know, it's a good thing to do, it is.
Especially if there's a lack of water, huh?
Yeah, I don't try to pretend like I'm putting on some kind of a religious ceremony when I'm not, because it's not, you know, because I have no business doing that. But I mean, it is a good way to get clean.
Have you ever attended any of the peyote meetings the Indians do?
Yeah, I went to one.
And what are they like?
Well, it was like torture to me. You get in there, and you have to roll up this thing of sacred tobacco, but they don't use a smoking mixture, they use Bull Durham. So they made me roll up a Bull Durham cigarette, and I don't even smoke, but I had to smoke that as soon as I got into the meeting. And then I had already had a couple Bloody Marys before I went in there, and you're not supposed to drink any alcohol. And I had to sit up with them all night while they passed around this powdered peyote and peyote tea to wash it down with, and every 15 minutes you have to take a handful of dried peyote buttons and then wash it down with peyote tea, which is real bitter and yucky. And you can't. But it was neat, the way they do it, the way they hold their meetings. They have all these different reasons for having a meeting, like a birthday meeting or a healing meeting, and it's real beautiful, the way, you know, the whole idea of what the ceremony is for. It is real spiritual. And I got into that. They use like flicker feathers for healing. Certain, whatever, you know, for their fans, they have different kind of bird feathers that mean different things.
And who's responsible for these feathers? I know a lady named Patty Rail of the Southern Ute tribe who is considered a bruja. A bruja meaning, well, we could translate it to a witch, a medicine woman. The white man can translate this any way he wants. Because, you know, the white man doesn't, you know, he differs in his beliefs than this, you know. And I was there when she, and my white friend Carl was healed by a bunch of feather stroking. That's what I call it. Let's go get feather stroked. You know, anymore, when I gotta go see the doctor, I tend to say, let's go get feather stroked.
Either that or have your house saged.
Do you think, oh yeah, smudged, smudged. Is the word smudged? I don't know if you know anything behind this or not.
Well, it is. It's, I mean, in the right hands, it is beneficial. I mean, anything, any kind of a cleansing. I really have always practiced herbal medicine and studied it on my own and stuff. And it does. It works. But you have to be real consistent with it. You cannot just go back and forth between, you know, a bad lifestyle and go do some herbs and think you're going to be healed. You have to really live it. Believe it. It's a whole cleansing of your body and mind. And that's why a lot of us today are not in tune with our minds. Our minds and bodies are separate. And that's why we have so many more diseases now than we used to. Because it's like diseases are a state of mind, too.
Mm-hmm. Is this an Indian belief, you suppose?
Yeah, it's a spiritual
belief.
It's not just
belief.
An Indian belief. It's just it's a universal belief.
The white man don't believe this necessarily.
Well, anybody but the white man believes it. Orientals. Indians.
You suppose your son's got a tobacco habit?
Why, is he stealing your cigarettes?
Well,
did
I'm
he?
Sure smoking a lot more than I used to.
He better not be. I'm going to ring him.
Little Paiute. Which is, you know, there was a Paiute Indian tribe other than the Utes. Today, you know, I don't know any Paiutes. But my Southern Ute friends, when they refer to the word Paiute, this is a thieving Indian, which could have only meant that it was just a warring tribe that they didn't care about and is carried on through culture, even though we don't see them anymore, you know? So, being as I've lived in Southwest Colorado all my life, I use some of the same terminology, and I find that curious. The foods we eat, this and that, everything we do, you know, even as white men, you and I, we have learned that many things we're calling Mexican food because we are very much influenced by the Spaniard and by the Indian, the foods we eat and whatnot in Southwest Colorado and all of the Southwest. Whereas, you know, if you go to Mexico itself, you can find a taco. You can find a quesadilla, but you won't find a burrito. You might give me some insight. I want to say the burrito is an Indian food. And the tortilla, which is, you know, a basic food substance of both, it seems, the Spaniards and the Indians. Are you familiar with this food culture?
Well, there's a Mexican food. Yeah, I noticed that too, traveling down to Mexico the first time I ever went down there, was what they called enchiladas. It's just corn tortillas with onions rolled up in them, dipped in a sauce.
So what we know as an enchilada is a white man, which is a little bit better than that, sounds
they
like.
They don't have any cheese. Well, some parts don't. They have their own cheese, though, down there.
So cheese is actually maybe a white man's technology added to their food.
Yeah.
You know, they had milk, you know, they raised the sheep,
milk.
Goats and stuff, and I would like to think they invented cheese, but maybe they didn't find it important, it was not part of their diet.
It depends on what part of Mexico you're at, too, because different parts are...
But what about the Indians? I mean...
Oh, the Indians didn't have cheese. No.
The Indians didn't do cheese, but they did tortillas. Am I wrong?
Yeah, they did like corn cakes or something. I don't know if they did tortillas.
Oh, then a tortilla is more of a cake then, huh?
Yeah.
And because even our cornbread is I call it a southern food.
They did like, well, you know, thicker fry bread and stuff too, than animals do. And
you know, it seems to me in this part of our country, in our restaurants, you know, we got our Mexican restaurants. We don't have any Indian restaurants. When a lot of our food we're claiming is Mexican, is really Indian. The burrito being one. Burrito's Indian. It's not Mexican. You can't go to Mexican and get a burrito. They look at you, what? A little donkey? You know? You want a little donkey? Sure. Next thing I know, I'm going to have something that looks like a steak. And I'm eating donkey meat. A little donkey, like lamb chops.
They had, you know that curly dock? The tops, they would grind it and make flour out of it. Grows real tall. Sorrel, they call it. And
is it pronounced Yorl?
No, sorrel.
S-O-R-R-E-L?
S-O-R-E-L. And then high in the mountains, on the rock slides and stuff, when you're hiking or riding way up there where there's nothing else to eat, or maybe not even any water, you can pick those leaves of that alpine sorrel, and suck on them, and they taste like they were dipped in lemon. They're real tangy, and they quench your thirst. And they're like a miniature of the dock or the sorrel that they would grind. They had little tiny grain heads on them, too. You know, you could just eat those, and you get some amount of protein that's like wheat, a lot better, though, than wheat. And then there's like bistort, which grows high in the alpine range, which the root of it, if you have a sore throat, you can suck on a piece of the root. Yarrow, which is a thickener. Strawberry leaves, which are blood purifier. Raspberry leaf, which you can make this tea, and pregnant women should drink it every morning of their whole pregnancy, which I did, and it helps you have an easier delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied a lot of these herbs that or whenever, wherever I was living in the area. And if you're just doing that, and sweat lodges, and drinking herbal teas and stuff, then you are really healthy. I was never sick when I was doing sweat lodges all the time.
Of all the Indian tribes in the Southwest, only the Southwest, and we're not going to talk about the Dakotas, or the Nez Perce, mainly the Utes, the Navajos, Paiutes, the Hopis, Wiminuche, as you kind of mentioned earlier. This was a separate Indian tribe. It seems to me they've been classified as mountain Utes, but they were separate. And the white man and Spaniard conquering of the Indian, which Indian group do you think has done the best dealing with this situation?
That'd really be hard to say, because within each tribe there are ones that still practice their original beliefs,
mm-hmm.
even though they have to work, they have to lead a double life. And some of them have totally given up, but you find those in every tribe, and same goes with white men, you know. So you can find all kinds in any tribe. Like, I was really impressed with the Zunis down in south
that.
Of Gallup.
Zunis, yeah.
They are some of the coolest people. Tall, handsome, in good shape. Every one of them that I saw down there, I didn't spend that much time with them, but anyone that I was, you know, had any encounter with, I was really impressed with them. But I mean, in any tribe, they're like the Navajos. It was really neat to take these Monument Valley trips and get behind the scenes of the Navajo Rez, and to have Lorenzo to travel with and tell me all these neat things about them, you know. The way that they, like him and his wife, had their traditional Navajo wedding. And his wife's dad makes all these little wood carvings, all these figures. He's an artist. Like, his whole family is artists. He is himself. He mm-hmm. does little paintings, sand paintings.
Seems to be a part of the culture.
Yeah. And they are just a beautiful culture. Like, you know, you always get, well, every tribe tries to give you a bad impression of the other tribe. But within themselves, they're all really beautiful. Each tribe has its own culture, which is so different, you know, from one tribe to the next. Their artwork, their quill work, their bead work, like the Seminoles in Florida. to the, who were the ones up in Washington?
Well, I hold the Nez Perce, the Blackfeet, and the Southwest Feet, the Zunis, I forgot that earlier. I have the Navajo and the Utes, the Hopis. I think the Apache.
Mm-hmm. They're in Arizona and Texas. And the styles of the moccasins that were for their, where they were at for their habitat. Like when I was down in Texas, we made ourselves some moccasins, Apache boots, mm-hmm. we call them, because they're high so the snakes can't bite you in the ankle.
And that was the reason for it. Yeah. It was a moccasin, but it was high because of the desolate area that they...
Well, not desolate, but snakes, poisonous, well, yeah. Lots of poisonous snakes.
I guess it's, I say desolate because I always picture a
jungle.
Poisonous snakes. Well,
in a jungle area.
For me, I guess it's just my own closed-mindedness that poisonous snakes are in the desert.
No, the most poisonous ones live in the most tropical,
mm-hmm.
like
so
the copperheads.
So my part of the area, in other words, if I'm traveling in the Wiminooch, snake is the
just
last of my
garter,
fears.
Little garter snake.
The last of my fears. Whereas in the desert, the rattlesnake, being the only poisonous snake that I'm familiar with in the United States or in the Southwest, I take it might be the only poisonous snake in the Southwest United States.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different brands of rattlers, timber rattlers,
mm-hmm.
which we get up here. We've had some come down out of the HDs, and I've seen some up there. And then the Mojaves in Arizona, there's like five or six different kind of rattlesnakes. Diamond rattlers, I don't even know all the names of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Mojaves are real aggressive, they'll come right after you. But the rest of them pretty much don't want to run into people.
So Sharon, with your attitude towards the Southwest Indians and whatnot, and we've all been to school and know a history, whether it's propaganda by the white man and this and that. And in past times you've heard me argue with you. You know, that the Indian himself would have capitalized the area if the white man would not have shown up. I've given you proof because they war with other tribes and they even took slaves from other tribes. This is a fact.
Captives. But, I mean, it was different. They still carried on their same way of life, in which... They had been here for hundreds of years before.
In other words, they could take a slave, but you never got rid of the culture.
No, they would still keep their same culture.
Mm-hmm.
They
Whereas the white man took a slave and changed the culture.
Well, no, the white man just has a different culture, a different way of looking, a different philosophy of life, I think.
So in closing, how would you like now for the white man to react to the Indian? You know, we grew up in this same area. The school I went to, you know, we did not have a majority group. One-third white, one-third Spanish, one-third Indian. You know, we all got along. And we didn't even look at each other as a different culture. Do you think this is true of everybody, or do we still look at the Indian as less than white?
Well, I don't. I don't know. Some people might, but they're in their own right, they're just, you know, they just have a different philosophy on life. And we'll never understand it. You know, we have to just, we have to realize that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Do you think it is right for, you know, an Ignacio, which is a, what do I call it? Is it the capital of the Southern Ute Reservation?
Supposedly, but Ignacio itself is a Spanish town.
Uh-huh.
But it is the headquarters of the Southern Ute Reservation.
Do you think the white man... Even when they do their sun dances and their bear dances, have any right to be involved in that?
The white men?
Yeah. Even though they may agree with their culture, they say, hey, the Indian culture, Indian religious beliefs, everything is cool. Therefore, I want to be part of it. Does that make it right for me to get involved in Indian rituals?
If it's okay with the Indians that you do.
And it has been.
Yeah.
It has been. And so you think that's okay.
Well, like I'm saying, when I went to this peyote meeting, Ben Eagle, a white medicine man, ran the meeting.
Really?
Yeah. Which I thought was weird.
So what we're seeing today in 1981, then, is that, at least in this part of Southwest Colorado, which you and I are most familiar with, depending on the white man's attitude, he becomes one with the Indian, and 100 years from now, they might look at this as a whole different culture, not distinguishing us as Indian or white.
It's a state
as
of
a
mind.
Culture. Yeah. This was a people.
There is no way of classifying race anymore. I mean, they tried. They've given up. They don't even classify race anymore in America, let alone probably other places too, because at last count...
Because we're Americans, huh?
Well, at last count, I mean, it's so mixed up. There's just no way of really determining any race anymore.
You know, one thing I liked about an Indian friend of mine, and it's because a white friend of mine was in a real jam, and he was sure it was his cousins that got him in trouble. But he looked at it as my best imitation of Eric Williams is, you and Tom Sitton are like brothers to me. Mm-hmm. You might be white, but you have proven to be brothers to me. And maybe my cousin has done a bad thing to your brother, and therefore we should do something about it.
Yeah.
Do you think this is the what Indian culture has come to? Do you think a certain white man and Indian, that 100 years from now, and they look on history of 1991, they will no longer, I mean, they'll have the history books, things aren't going to disappear. But they're going to say in 1991, in southwest Colorado, northern Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, this Four Corners area, they're going to say this became one culture. They were Indians, white, Spanish, but many shared the same culture.
Yeah.
Even though the ancestors started off as differently.
It's a belief, it's a way of life. It's not necessarily your bloodlines.
And Indian culture could actually disappear, as it's trying to do now.
No, there's...
Except for those that hide away.
No, they're not hidden away either. There's ones that live in everyday life, usually the ones that hold down the most prominent jobs, still practice, like Alden Naranjo, who's very spiritual. He mm-hmm. still goes to meetings every week, every weekend. But you know that the peyote meetings only came about as a result of the reservations?
This did not exist before
no.
then? And what was the reason?
Only because so they could dream and still pray for the way to get it back to the way it was. That's the whole purpose of the way, why the peyote meetings even started, is when the Indians were captivated, were captured, and tried to be, you know, well contained and stuff. That's the only way they had to still, then that religion developed as a result of that.
Sharon?
Yeah.
Thanks a bunch.
Yeah.